Welcome back to Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast that harkens back to a simple pastoral life where men were men and waifus were waifus. I am Nate. Once again, I'm here with Remy, and we are gonna...
Hey, don't tell him my name. Don't dox me like that.
They know at this point.
Oh, my God.
They know at this point.
Oh, I said no names.
The deal is total anonymity.
God. And my code name would have been so cool. But fuck it. Whatever. Whatever. We'll do it your way.
Okay. No, excuse me. I'll take it back. I am Nate, and I'm here with Onyx Raven. That's what you're going to go with, right?
Onyx Raven.
Yeah.
Darkness Dementia Raven Way.
Hey, that's copyrighted.
You know what I actually really like is I have to assume these are procedurally generated, much like in Metal Gear Solid 5 when you abduct people. But all the random NPCs in Stalker 2, they all have names, right? Like Weed Johnson or shit like that, you know?
Shivering Jimmy.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. And of course, all the vendor NPCs are all just named the thing they sell.
Hey, it's old Caney McGee. He sells tin cans.
Star Kid, if you need a good backpack, go talk to Backpack.
Okay. Well, it's easy to remember.
Well, no, they call him Backpack for a totally unrelated and honestly very tragic reason.
It's a her. Sexist.
My bad, I haven't gotten that far. I got to the part where the main character... is pissed off that his apartment got broken by a big rock, and that is his entire motivation.
The first two seconds of the game?
Well, I tried to play after that, but it kept doing this weird thing where it would just kind of not work due to being a shitty Unreal Engine game.
Yeah, a heavily customized Unreal Engine game.
I did not mean to take away from the major accomplishments of doing whatever they did to the Unreal 5 engine to make it work as well as they did, to be honest.
I have only had the like annoying pebble in your shoe type bugs so far. Mm-hmm. in the hours I've put into Stalker. I had one time where it scared the shit out of me where I had a very bad, let's say, combat encounter. And when I went to reload my last quick save, it spawned me at the very first moment of gameplay in the game with an infinite amount of items in my backpack.
That's awesome, though.
No, it's not awesome. It was not awesome. And I immediately quit out because I knew if I had let the engine run for like even a couple more minutes, my computer might have caught on fire.
It would have physically picked itself up and jumped out of your window.
Yes. Did I say like how I'm not hating too much on Stalker 2. It came out. It was many years of anticipation. It came out and I don't want to hate on it too much. But I will say the thing I really loved about Stalker and the experience I chased for many, many years after being like mostly like a Stalker anomaly player was A-Life, the zone simulation, right?
Yes. And
when the game came out, it did not launch with A-Life, despite being like one of the bullet point selling features.
Well, I don't think it has it implemented at all.
If it is implemented by now, they put out a couple patches. If it is implemented by now, it is still not working.
Yeah. So I'll go back a bit. I did play a little bit more than the very first cutscene. I got through the tutorial section where you have to go around and place the scanner thing in those spots, and then something goes wrong, those soldiers come, they take your scanner, and they take your fancy rock, and you're like, well, fuck this shit. After I got into the main game and went to the first town and kind of explored around a little bit, you know, I started running into serious memory leak issues that were slowing me down, like, pretty bad, like, down to, like, in the low 20s frame rate about an hour into gameplay. So I decided to put it down and come back after they've kind of cleaned it up a bit, which they have three patches out right now. People are saying that it's a noticeably better experience than it was at launch, but that's also like not a hard bar to clear.
Yeah, I mean, I did not have those problems. I had other problems. My problems were more like, it's really difficult to see things sometimes in the game.
Do you have frame generation turned on?
I can't remember. I turned on and off all kinds of stuff, and not a single thing made any difference.
Yeah. The one thing that I did notice, I was getting that issue that a lot of people are talking about, where if you have the frame generation turned on, your, you know, the mouse reticle drags behind your actual mouse movement by like half a second, and it was the most annoying, infuriating thing ever. So I stepped away at that point, and I reinstalled Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl just to compare, and man, that game still plays fine as hell.
It's fine
with some heavy modding to help it along.
I don't think I've played Stalker unmodded in over like a decade, maybe more than a decade, so I don't know. And also, like I said, I pretty much only played Anomaly as well, so I had a full like kind of overhaul installed at all times. And I, you know, that is kind of a weird thing in that going from Anomaly, I think I talked to you a while back about my reservations, especially when I saw kind of the launch trailer and all that stuff, that being I was afraid this was going to be a AAA game. And I think for the most part, my fears have kind of been realized, because they have desperately tried to split the difference between like a hardcore Stalker experience and something that is a game somebody could buy from the store on an Xbox and just play, right? And this could be being completely wrong. You tell me, because when I played Stalker, I always play with hunger, thirst, tiredness, fatigue, weapon degradation, weapon parts swapping, backpacks, manual clips for the guns, all this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. And honestly, that's how I always play. I think that's kind of the intended experience, right? Stalker, Shadow of Chernobyl, and its expansions, at least in their vanilla state. I've been replaying them with the Zone Reclamation mod pack, which is mostly a bunch of quality of life and like engine stability fixes. It doesn't do a whole lot of heavy modification on actual like gameplay or game content or anything like that. So that's the way I've been playing them, and they've always been, I would say, if game genre is a spectrum, they lean heavily towards RPG, but in the way that they're more immersive sim kind of RPG than
immersive sim survival.
Yeah, see, it's what
with weird military fetishist shit.
Yeah, exactly. It's what I describe as like an incredibly crunchy game, you know, where you can get at down into the real nitty gritty of how the gameplay works and take advantage
of it. Die 1,000 times in the first 2 seconds of playing the game because your gun doesn't work.
Yes.
And every single thing kills you in one hit. And you can't see your enemies, but they can see you from 1,000 paces, and they always headshot you. And they will shoot through walls and hills to get you.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the kind of stuff that I like, to be perfectly clear. I like that shit. I think it's fun when my character gets killed in a totally weird or unexpected way, you know, which ties back into the A-Life thing, which you were saying. It's basically their in-game engine that simulates the goings-on of the entire zone at once to give it a more lifelike appearance. So
yeah, so it's there's more than one dumbass besides you running around getting headshotted without knowing where the bullet came from.
Exactly. And you can see that just walking around in the Shadow of Chernobyl world, where you'll just be like going along and there's a dude just getting chased around by a pack of dogs.
Yeah, very
funny. Not even a quest where you have to go save him and he gives you a reward. It's just like, oh, that's just a dude and he's unlucky and he got attacked by those dogs.
Yeah. No, you really get into it, and you're like, man, I hope those dogs kill that guy so I can take his stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's more the Stalker experience. And I will say, in Stalker 2, they pretty much kept all the, like, NPCs can shoot you through walls and see you from 1,000 yards, even though you can't see them because the engine hasn't loaded them, their models, into the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can see you in pitch black darkness without having to turn their flashlight on and all that stuff. The problem being is they took all that other weird stuff out. You don't have the manual clips. You don't have thirst. You have hunger and sleep deprivation, but they basically don't matter. You have weapon degradation, but it's just a way to, like, make you have to go back to the shops and repair them every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was one thing. I don't know if you noticed this, but your starting pistol in Stalker 2 is much
better than
most of the other weapons that you can get, and it's free to repair.
It's better than every pistol in the game. And I,
what did they mean by this?
I'm wondering why that is. I've tried to go and get other pistols, but they're just not good. They're not good, man.
And I think that's fine. I think that having just a bunch of pistols that aren't good, that you can cycle through, is part of the Stalker experience. I find going the other way breaks the verisimilitude for me. Anything that makes me feel like too powerful or too much like an actual main character ruins the whole experience, takes me right out of it.
Yes, which is weird about it, because pump fake towards being a AAA game, there is all this like narrative and story about how your guy has like a special role to play in the zone, and you're meeting all these characters who are like, hey, Skeef, Stalker, you know, and they have stuff they want you to do, and they keep telling you about the big grandiose design the zone has. And not to spoil anything, but you straight up play like a mini version of Half-Life 1 like 20 hours into the game.
Uh-huh.
Which is just super weird. It's just a very weird thing to put in a Stalker game. It's strange.
Well, I think what Shadow of Chernobyl did really well was that, yeah, your character was definitely the main character of his own story, but his story was almost entirely self-serving narratively, because, spoilers, you start off the game searching for a guy named Strelok, and then, like, 2 hours into the game, you find out that you are Strelok.
Cheeky-breeky.
Strelok.
Sekabliet.
Yeah, but Doctor, I am Strelok.
Go see Stalker. Very funny. Cure you right up.
Hey, Stalker. That's pretty good. Since I played Anomaly, which is just like the deathmatch version of Stalker, you have no name. There is basically no story. You are just one of the group of stalkers in the game who are all trying to kill each other, which is very fun. I love that mode for a lot of reasons. Again, because it's a death game.
Mm-hmm.
And like a death game, whenever another stalker dies, their name gets called out over the clear channel radio. And they're like, hey, say goodbye to Bone Fiend. He got eaten by a pack of dogs in garbage. And it's like, okay, cool. That's awesome. I love that. It gives them their faction and how they died and what their stupid code name was and how many stalkers are left in the zone at that point. I love that. No main character syndrome there. You are just a dude. You're lucky if you get a secondhand Mosin Nagant and enough ammo to like keep yourself alive. That's it. That's the Stalker I like.
Yeah, that's the crunchiness that I was talking about, you know.
Yeah.
Getting real deep in there. I like that. Now it would be interesting if Stalker 2, instead of going the AAA route, which, by the way, one last thing to say on that, it was done for me in terms of how comparable it was to the first one when they fully implemented autosave instead of manual quick saving.
Mashing F5.
Yeah. Which is always number one gameplay mechanic for me. I love a good quick save.
You love that. You
I love that.
I love an autosave. I don't like wasting time. So
No, I like being in control. I like being punished for forgetting to save after several hours of gameplay, which I've done several times.
You're a save sub.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, what I was going to say is it would be real interesting if Stalker 2 had swung in the complete opposite direction and had been more of a spiritual successor to the Tarkovsky film from 79 and have it be real, like, boring and long and drawn out and meditative.
And you never see anyone else.
Yeah.
And nothing cool happens, and it's all super representational. You have to dig into, like, the symbological meaning of everything before you can find, like, what to do next.
Well, you see, you have to be a little bit well-versed in Russian literature to fully understand what he was going for with this game.
Eastern Orthodox Catholicism.
Yeah. At the end of the game, you find one mute girl who can move stuff across a table with her mind.
I mean, I will say, I'll give him credit because, like, the big thing at the center of the zone is the wish granter. And the wish granter is sort of a vaguely malicious entity that just manipulates people into self-destruction, which is a pretty big part of the Stalker film.
Yeah, I would say that's kind of the whole point of the movie.
That's kind of that they kept that part. So I don't know. Maybe they deserve a little bit of credit. I don't know.
Well, you see, we wanted to go more authentic to the tone of the film, but it was just so boring, so we had to add all these mutants in there. our hands were tied.
Yeah, Tarkovsky was trying to get more funding for the movie so he could fit the mutants in. Yeah. He really wanted the invisible bloodsuckers to make it into the movie for our main characters to kind of have some more conflict. But they just could not raise the funds. So,
and this is where we're going to put our radioactive pit of glowing goo. Actually, Andre, about that, we've run into a bit of a funding problem.
Okay, that's enough Stalker talk. I think that's Stalker. Everybody knows what Stalker is.
This has been our bit, Stalker talk. Thank you for listening.
You know, I do have another video game. I know you were playing Stardew Valley because you were so disappointed with Stalker.
Well, I would, now that you bring it up, it is kind of like a Barbie Oppenheimer thing, right?
I guess so.
I needed the tonal dissonance between what Stalker was providing and the idyllic countryside lifestyle that, let's be honest, we all yearn for right now in these trying political times.
I'm not sure that's too different because a lot of the Stalkers do yearn for the simple pastoral beauty of the untamed land.
Yeah, I'm sure it's out there already, but a Harvest Moon clone that takes place inside of the zone. That would be kind of fun to play around with, right?
Yeah, that'd be cool. You know, some of the Harvest Moons, when they got really weird, they did have like a bunch of weird RPG elements introduced to them where like your farm was on a cliffside over a monster pit or like an evil ore mine where monsters would spill out. So, I mean, in that way, it's a little.
Imagine
the
logistics of that world. Like, oh, yeah, here's your farm, and that's the village where we all live, and that's the pit where all of the evil in the world crawls out of.
Yeah, and there's the goblin hole. Don't worry. They mostly come out at night and just steal your vegetables, but you are going to have to watch out for that.
I mean, they kind of do that in Stardew Valley as well. You know, after a while, you get access to new areas besides the starting like village and farm. And one of them is like you go down in the sewers and the sewer is just filled with like radioactive goo and you can catch radioactive fish out of it and make like radioactive material from the mutant fish.
Oh, you serve the mutant fish to your enemies and have them die slowly from radiation poisoning?
I don't think you could justify modding enemies into Stardew Valley. It's too wholesome.
Oh, come on.
I don't know. It would feels like it would go against the whole point, right? I am generally not a person who believes in the value of escapist media. I don't think that people should be able to escape their problems for any length of time, period. Everyone should exist in a constant state of anxiety, both about personal issues and the greater state of the world. But I do give Stardew Valley an exception because, honestly, I'm one of the lucky ones, but most people in our generation are not going to be landowners of any kind at any point. So this is the closest that they will get to simulating that kind of life, right? Of
yeah,
being able to
you really
like own
you
and produce.
Really lucked in. You really lucked into that plantation, but the rest of us are unfortunately going to be landless peasants. I'm looking at a mod called Stronger and More Random Monsters right now. So you're unfortunately you're full of shit.
Well, no, that's different. That's different. Monsters are in a plenty in the game, and even one of the farm archetypes that you can start off with, like it's one of its benefits is that monsters come in and invade your farm at night and you have to kill them and it gives you extra resources. I was thinking more like it would be weird to mod in like a human character or characters whose specific goal was to just hate on you specifically. Like, okay. Yeah, this is the mod that puts in the asshole that really hates me.
The jerk?
Yeah,
okay,
jerk
I'm
mod.
Modding in the jerk. He comes in and he just makes fun of you. He's constantly bullying you.
He comes in, he makes fun of your farm. Yeah, he bullies you. He kicks over your plants if you're not, like, paying attention to him.
Yeah, he waits until you're with your wife, and then he just mocks you relentlessly. He calls your vegetables trash.
He tips your cows.
Yeah, why don't they mod in drunk teenagers that come cow tipping at night? Okay, well, Stardew Valley does not have an anime, so let's talk about a game with an anime.
Wait, they're making animes out of games now? Go on, I am intrigued.
Oh, they're doing all kinds. There are no rules.
There's no rules anymore, people.
They got rid of the rules. There are no rules anymore.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Parliament just voted 190-0 that the rules are back on. There are rules again.
Oh, fuck.
Sorry.
Fuck.
We declared no rules for about 3 hours, and then the rules were back on.
This one slipped under the radar then, because this was just a couple days ago. When I talked about playing visual novels, right?
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that awful one. We will never bring up again. And I mentioned I was playing a couple other ones, and I still am. You know, I'm playing Your Turn to Die, Death Game by Majority. I'm also playing one called Noja that I probably mentioned before. It's essentially a visual novel version of Werewolf, right? The Wolf Game.
Oh, I thought it was a visual novel about the hip-hop artist Noja Cat. That's a joke. I'm gonna
breeze right over that one. So that one's really interesting because it has a lot of really weird and unique mechanics to it because it is a visual novel that is Wolf Game.
Wolf Game.
And you just play Wolf Game over and over again. There's like a rotating cast of characters. You're stuck on a spaceship and somebody is Wolf Game. And you gotta vote in and out the people who maybe are Wolf Game.
Wait, are you talking about Mafia? The game Mafia?
Some people call it that. Some dumb losers call it Mafia, but it is Wolf Game.
I've never heard it described as Wolf. Okay, no, moving on. Go. So they're on a spaceship and they gotta find the one that is among them, correct?
Yes. And the idea is you are navigating a time loop where you have to continue playing this game over and over again until you can meet very specific circumstances that progress the overarching story forward, which is a really cool format. I mean, this is a really fascinating game. It's very, very cool. And just the other day, they announced, like they have it before, many other visual novels, it's getting an anime, which I find extremely baffling because, like I said, The game is just doing the same thing over and over again. Sometimes hundreds of times, depending on how efficient you are.
Yeah, you have to wonder how that is going to, like, break up into a narrative. Like, I don't know. Maybe they could do something. We just talked about the Tatami Galaxy, right?
Yeah.
And the whole premise of that was that it is a time loop where the main character is reliving the same school year over and over again, but making different decisions each time. So I could see them doing something like that. I mean, that may be the only way they could do it, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that is very explicitly the entire point of the thing. What I'm more curious about is how they represent the, like, constant repetition of the main gameplay loop without just skipping over it completely. Because they could just do that. I mean, they do that with other visual novels where they kind of streamline everything. But in those cases, you know, in your Fate's Day Nights, in your Steins Gates, there's already mostly just a story to tell. Sometimes there's branching parts, but it's mostly just a linear narrative. With this game, you get a little droplet, a little orphan boy's serving of porridge every once in a while when you're playing this game. And so I guess the idea would be they're just going to stretch that as like thin as possible.
Well, I guess it's going to depend on how long the anime is planned on being, because it seems kind of like a thin premise to try and do a 12-episode season out of and have that be like a complete thing.
Yeah. I mean, none of that stuff's announced yet. We don't know how many episodes.
Yeah.
I don't know what studio is even doing. I think it's being produced by Aniplex.
Aniplex,
which is not bad. I mean, those are the Demon Slayer guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're in charge of Fullmetal Alchemist, Naruto. What are the other big ones?
Did they do Bleach?
I know they did Sword Art Online and Soul Eater, and I think they did Blue Exorcist. Let's see here. Oh, God, here's the tie-in. They also did Madoka Magica.
I was just about to say, I pulled it up, was the first thing that came up here.
Oh, no.
Hey, let's not forget that they are also in charge of several mobile games as well.
Most notably,
Disney's Twisted Wonderland, the sexy villain dating game.
Yes, which longtime listeners will remember every single detail of, because we went over it in excruciating detail. We combed through that thing. I thought that was really interesting. And what weird timing for that. I am very excited. Because it's a cool story. It's really interesting. The only bad side is that a lot of the characters have the worst anime disease outfits that you've ever seen in your life. We were talking about catastrophic costumes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like real bad?
Yeah, like a high school drama club with an infinite budget.
That's... I mean, you can do a lot with an infinite budget.
You could do a lot of war crimes with an infinite budget.
Just saying.
Okay, we'll see how that plays out. There is another fun announcement, though. We talked a little bit about this earlier, but they announced a new Gundam series, Gundam G-Cux.
I believe it's pronounced G-Quax.
It's got to be G-Cux.
G-Cool?
This is a second entry in the lesbian Gundam pilot series, beginning with Witch from Mercury.
We don't know that they are lesbians, just because they're following up the famous Gundam lesbian series, and the only announcement they've made is an image showing a rather goofy-looking Gundam and two female characters. We cannot assume.
Well, that's not true. No, that's not true. See, I'm watching the teaser trailer right now.
Oh, teaser trailer's out.
They're very clearly doing roller derby. I think this is a settled issue.
Fair enough. All right. Well, see, what I was initially intrigued by was the G prefix and how the plot seems to be centered around the competitive Gundam scene, right? Which is something that they also did in Witch from Mercury, where Gundams, yes, they are giant war death machines used to kill countless civilians over and over again through all of the series.
Yeah, but they're also fun toys to play with.
They're also fun toys to play with, and you can have a fun little tussle with your bros in your Gundam. Do a little Gundam wrestling match, which, you know, let's be honest, this is all kind of calling back to G Gundam. The best Gundam series, probably the most well-regarded in the entire franchise, if I can say that.
Some people seem to like it. I think that's about as far as I can go.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna be like sarcastic or facetious about it. I did like G Gundam a lot. I thought it was cool. Come on. Replacing the Olympics with giant robot battles where all of the robots are like specifically decoratively themed around their prospective countries. What is not charming and absolutely amazing about that? Come on.
No, don't get me wrong. I actually think that is the most realistic Gundam series ever made, because the idea that you would, like, roll around an actual war zone in one of these stupid fucking human-like robots is so insanely ridiculous. It would have to be purely pageantry, right?
Listen,
that's the only reason you build a human-sized robot.
I don't know what you're trying to get at here, because Hideo Kojima has spent the last 20 years trying to convince us all that the peak of human weaponry is, in fact, putting legs on a tank that can fire a nuke. Are you saying that's wrong?
You know what these nuke tanks need? Legs. That's the only improvement I can think of.
How is a tank supposed to get upstairs to fire the nuke, huh? Have you ever thought about that, Remy?
I know I'm not the first person to point this out, but in a lot of Gundam series, they also spend the vast majority flying. Like, in space, they don't use the fucking legs ever.
Well, you notice the main wing Gundam, the Gundam that had wings that could fly?
Yeah, the winged Gundam, yeah.
And
the
its whole thing was that wings. It could turn into a plane?
Yeah. Even though it had wings.
It
the
could
plane
fly.
Also had wings.
It could fly outside of the plane mode, which was confusing, right? I thought the whole point of the plane mode was so that it could fly, and the other Gundams couldn't fly. But no, they can all fly.
They can all fly.
With or without wings. So the wings are purely decorative, at least on those Gundams.
The wings are pointless. Yeah.
Now,
no, when Wing Gundam gets the big angel wings, that is purely symbolism.
Well, he has to get I shouldn't gender the Gundam. When the Gundam gets the angel wings, that is pure symbolism because it is up against the red devil Gundam that has bat wings. Gundam Epion was very clearly devil coded to the Wing Gundam's angel, right? Like, I'm not making that up.
That Gundam is devil coded.
Hey, you ever think that Gundam looks a little bit evil?
Yeah, Trey's Kushinada, queer coded, his Gundam, devil coded.
Man, Trace is the coolest. I love that guy.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy. That's the guy we all love.
Hey, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed fascist, thank you.
Yeah, the fascist eugenicist.
Hey, listen, is it eugenics if it's new types that want to be the dominant species?
It absolutely 100% is. And in the original series, Char says, I am pro-eugenics. I am a eugenicist. I want to genocide all of Earthlings so that I can replace them with the superior race. And people are like, well, he's very sympathetic. excuse me?
I don't know what you want. Char got 47% of the voting public.
He also did force the only known new types to murder each other. So he seems like his methods are a little counterintuitive, I have to say.
You ever think it was a little weird that one of the main like anime publications from our formative years was called New Type Magazine? What were they trying to imply with that one?
I think they were trying to imply that anime was a new type of entertainment. Right?
I suppose so. I suppose it could be read that way.
Right? Isn't that... That's how I always took it.
Hey, this new type magazine barely says anything about Gundams. This sucks.
The kind of girl you read about in new type magazines.
Now, what I was trying to get at earlier is...
Little Rick James.
All I can hope for...
Little Rick James for you.
I could only hope that Gundam G-Quux... G-Cucks?
G-Quacks? It's obviously Gundam G-Cucks.
Queeks. Gweeks.
It's Cux. It's Gundam G Cux. You can't get around it. It is Gundam G Cux.
I can only hope that Gundam G Cux has like a American flag themed roller derby Gundam that, I don't know, goes around on a giant roller derby track pushing over the other roller derby Gundams and has like, what's on the nose? A Captain America shield? Like, just a giant scale M16?
They've done that. They already did that.
Well, I liked the, in G Gundam, they had the Apollo Creed themed Gundam for America, right?
Yeah.
It had boxing shorts and boxing gloves. Like, come on.
Gundam, steal your girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I hope that they get at least a little bit. I hope they add some flair to the Gundams. To the competition Gundams and G-Cux. And maybe we'll all be a little bit better off with it.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, you know, Gundam pilots, they're a discriminated minority, okay?
Because they're all lesbians. That's what you mean.
Well, now, Gundam turned into a lesbian franchise so subtly we all barely noticed.
That is the new type they are talking about, is girl love girl.
It turns out the new type is Yuri.
That is Gundam's explicit point from day one. Let's take a break and I'll ruminate on that for a little bit.
Okay.
We've talked before about anime crimes, and we've talked about recurring themes in anime and sort of anime categories. We talked a little bit about genres and the sort of inflexibility of some manga genres sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And after a particular excursion I did recently, I want to talk about the mothership, the progenitor, the like ancient alien race that created the pyramids of all of this. Because for the first time, on a whim, I suppose, decided I was just going to go in and check in on what's running in Shueisha's Manga Plus app, which is also Jump Plus, which is essentially Shonen Jump, as far as I understand it.
Yeah, well, Weekly Jump and Shonen Jump, all of those have... I believe the app has all of their publications plus like specific online or app only like series, which is a big selling point from my understanding.
Yes. I don't know how to differentiate those. So I'm just taking the whole thing as one big bundle.
You're dipping your toes into the primordial pool of where all of this anime we keep seeing is coming from.
Yes. And this truly is the primordial ooze of the manga world as a whole. And I wanted to just, instead of just going through the manga that is currently available as in the premiere, the flagship manga publication, I wanted to kind of talk about what is the current manga meta.
I see.
What are we doing here, you know? And because Shonen Jump is basically setting the table for all of this shit, I figure this is a great way to determine this stuff. So as I go through it, I kind of want pull up a notepad or whatever
on it.
And I just want to go through this and we're going to kind of see what is happening. What is manga in 2024?
Well, so let's first, can we go back and just do a quick recap of what the meta was in manga in Jump when we were coming up in this modern hellscape of a planet. Because my formative years, it was, for better or worse, the archetypal shonen. We had the big three, right? One Piece, Naruto, Bleach. That was kind of like the main focus for the entire time that I was paying attention to what Jump was like mostly putting out. I know, obviously, One Piece is still in there. I don't know if it's their number one thing anymore, but it hasn't gone anywhere.
You don't?
Okay, it is their number one thing.
Well, I could tell you. Do you want to know?
Yeah, no, let's get into it. I want to see how it's changed from my admittedly infantile understanding of what Jump is doing.
In our heyday, in our youths, we were basically dealing with some pretty big swingers that are still relevant today. I mean, we are talking about our Yu-Gi-Ohs, right? Obviously, One Piece. Hunter x Hunter was going very strong. Shaman King, which just got a reboot, right?
Yeah.
Prince of Tennis, still going.
iShield 21.
Yeah. Naruto, still going. Mm-hmm. Black Cat, not still going. Bobobo, not still going. Bleach, still going.
Inexplicably.
Yeah. Gintama, still going. That was the Steel Ball Run era as well, but I wasn't reading JoJo back then.
Was JoJo in Jump? I thought that was a different publication, but maybe I'm wrong.
It was in Jump back then, at least.
Okay.
D. Gray Man, which is, again, still going.
You know, pushing the edge of that, like, era, I want to say Blue Exorcist was kind of gaining steam right around when a lot of the bigger stuff we just named was on its downturn.
Still, Blue Exorcist, still going.
Still going.
I don't know in relation to Shonen Jump, but Blue Exorcist, still going.
So I'm noticing a theme here of kind of these titans of industry, if you will, these big titles keep kind of shambling along zombie-like through the pages of Jump and now into the app. You name Black Cat as like the one thing in there that is since ceased. Everything else seems to be just continuing on.
Yeah. Well, why don't we dive in and see what we're dealing with?
Okay. All right. What's
new? I want to, like I said, I want to touch on the meta to make this a little more interesting to go over. So I want to talk about kind of the actual manga, but also the kind of broad strokes. We'll just take a look at what sits in the majority.
Okay.
So I didn't read all of these, but I feel like I read the majority of them. And some of them I've already read before. For example, Chainsaw Man, sitting pretty. Mm-hmm. Still going.
Still going.
Chainsaw Man, yes. And now what is Chainsaw Man? Chainsaw Man is half man.
Half chainsaw.
Half beast. That's one of our big, big meta plays right now. Half man, half stuff.
We're going to call this a Beast Boy.
Beast Boy, sure. Beast Boy. Halfsies. Being a halfsies is really very popular.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Chainsaw Man, what else is it? Chainsaw Man is, of course, a genre subversion, like we say a million times on every episode. I would say those are the two big ones that stand out for Chainsaw Man. We do, obviously, Chainsaw Man needs no introduction, so we can move on. One Piece. One Piece doesn't have a lot of kind of meta play, obviously, because it is just One Piece. It is the thing.
It is One Piece. It's like you said, it's the big one. And it is also, you know, it is mostly being carried along by the weight of its own momentum at this point. It is quite literally a juggernaut that's just going to keep going and going until Oda is either dead or somehow bored of it, which he has no indication of that being the case.
We're kind of sort of winding down. I won't get into it, but the story is progressing at a pretty good clip. I did recently catch up with One Piece. I left it dormant in my read list for a little while, and now I'm back on the bleeding edge, and it's definitely going some places. But One Piece is hot-headed dum-dum with powers.
I guess that is more of the genre of our day. Hot-headed dude with powers. Naruto, hot-headed dude. Ichigo from Bleach, hot-headed.
Yeah.
Goku, he's not really hot-headed. He's more just dumb. He was just kind of a dumb guy.
He's dumb. Yeah. But he is the plucky dumb-dumb with powers.
Plucky
dumb-dumb.
Which
is kind of the the big piece. So that is not mark one for that.
Yeah.
Next we've got Boruto. Obviously this is the Naruto reboot. I declined to read Boruto. I've read enough Naruto. I don't need any more. In fact, when I was reading Naruto, I also did not need more Naruto. I don't know why I kept going till the end, until the moon goddess came down and we had the big moon goddess boss battle, which made no sense and was completely superfluous to the plot anyway. Didn't matter. None of that shit mattered. As far as I know, Boruto is just edgy Naruto.
I don't even know if it's edgy. I think it's, aren't the main kids like even younger than the main cast of Naruto was at the beginning? They're like little kindergartners.
Not anymore. No. There was a time skip.
They did another time skip.
And Boruto only has one eye, so he's doing like a guts thing.
He got his eye. He lost his eye. Wow.
Yeah, he lost an eye. I feel like that is
a cheat code for character development. Just have him lose a body part.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we should knock this one up. We should mark this one as a couple things. One is reboot. I think that's the big one.
I've been labeling this as Nepo baby material.
Okay, mark it up as a Nepo baby.
Yeah.
All right. Next one is Dan to Dan. Goes without saying. This is also a pretty big up and coming medium or genre marker. This one is a powers comedy, a shonen battle comedy. Right.
Shonen battle comedy rom-com. Rom-comedy.
Yeah.
Powers rom-comedy is what I'm writing down.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty accurate. I believe, you know, we talked about that interview where somebody had told Yokinobu Tatsu that to make Dan to Dan, like, publishable, he needed to go away and read some shoujo manga before he came back, and he clearly did and decided to, like, the secret sauce was the shoujo elements.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. I do think that is what makes it more interesting than it would have been if it was just ghost versus aliens. You know, that's fine.
I'm not gonna say that isn't already, like, that is a good hook for me to begin with. I like that about it, but the fact that the ghost versus alien superpower fighting and like ghost hunting bits happen around this incredibly endearing like romance between these two like nerds.
Yes.
That is what I'm here for. And I'm gonna jot this down as genre subversion as well.
Sure, and you can also mark it down as a halfsies.
He is a half ghost, half boy.
So the next big notable one is Black Clover. Now this is plucky, hot-headed dum-dum.
Now, is he also a sword guy? Is he a sword boy?
Yeah, let's put him down as sword boy, because his big thing is that he has a sword.
He's got a sword and he's a plucky dum-dum.
Yes. Plucky dum-dum with sword boy. Everybody knows Black Clover. That's the plucky dum-dum sword boy.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. We've got Kaiju number 8. Big time halvesies.
I mean, the biggest, if we're being honest.
Well, he doesn't get that big. They call him Kaiju, but he doesn't get big. I think we talked about this when the anime premiered, how one of my bigger gripes, besides the fact that they had an interesting premise and ruined it, was that he doesn't get big. He's like the normal sized guy. Maybe he got big later when I stopped reading it, but when he first turns into a kaiju, it's like, that's a kaiju.
He's a big guy with kind of like a monster suit on.
Yeah.
As opposed to an actual giant monster, which I'm pretty sure he does turn into. I've seen screens from the anime of him turning into a giant monster at least once. So he's got that going for him. But he is a big time beast boy. What he isn't is a plucky dum-dum. He's not a dum-dum. He is plucky, though. He's more of like a practical middle-aged man trying to figure out this weird situation that he got into.
Yeah,
that's not really reading as plucky to me.
Not a plucky dum-dum. But we introduce one of our first, and I want to call this Navy SEAL, which is a government military contractor on a special ops team.
I see.
This is a big genre. Actually, I should have said we can mark one down for Chainsaw Man as well. I'm sorry. He is also, even though it gets genre subverted, he is also a Navy SEAL.
Yeah, the
Denji is a Navy SEAL.
The government professional kind of thing, right?
Yeah. He's a military contractor, and part of a special ops team. So he's a Navy SEAL.
See, I was gonna say that's it feels more like a Men in Black scenario where the plucky dum dum inexplicably gets recruited into the Navy SEALs or whatever, right?
Yes, but still a Navy SEAL.
Fair enough.
The Men in Black were also Navy SEALs.
I feel less comfortable giving that, but yeah, let's move on.
Let's move on. I will not take no for an answer. They are Navy SEALs. Let's move on. Special ops teams are Navy SEALs. You call them Delta Squad if you want. moving on, we have, of course, the up-and-comer, Kagurabachi. Now, this is a sword boy right off the bat. Big-time sword boy.
This is in opposition to Black Clover's sword boy. This is a an edgy sword boy.
Edgy, brooding sword boy, yes. Magic powers sword boy. Now, he is not a Navy SEAL, even though the story does kind of faint towards him being a Navy SEAL, but he is not a Navy SEAL.
The government wants him to be a Navy SEAL, but actually he's too badass and he's a punisher is what he is.
Exactly. And that's what we're going to put down because he is a dad revenger.
I'm going to put dad revenger.
Dad revenger, big time dad revenger.
Yeah.
That is a huge part of his story. And also a lot of these that comes up a lot.
Not Chainsaw Man.
Not Chainsaw Man. very pointedly not Chainsaw Man. The next one is Sakamoto Days. If you'll remember, this is the manga about a fat guy who's good at karate.
let's give it a little bit more of a gracious description and say that this is morally acceptable Leon the Professional.
No. He is an ex-assassin, so let's put ex-assassin on there because that's also a big play. But it is a powers comedy. It is a shonen comedy. The main gag is that he gets thin when he's doing cool stuff, and then he gets fat again.
Man, I really hate that.
Yeah, it sucks.
I didn't know that about this comic. I really hate that. I think it would be so much more visually interesting to have him be the ex-assassin, ex-super assassin dude who fell out of shape but is still, like, an amazing assassin, and have him do all these amazing, like, karate moves and jumping off buildings and stuff while being, like, a schlubby dude.
Yeah.
That sounds way more interesting.
That guy exists in a lot of manga, but he's usually, like, you know, a second stringer who is used as a gag.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, what do we call this? I want to say that this falls into a budding subgenre of One Punch Man-esque, like, plots where the joke is unassuming person is actually the most powerful.
Yes, the most powerful.
Yeah.
We could call it Superman Syndrome or One Puncher. You can call it a One Puncher.
I mean, yeah, One Puncher.
So we've got on Sakamoto Days, we've got three things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Battle comedy, ex-assassin, or just assassin, and one puncher.
I mean, is he an ex-assassin if he still goes around doing assassin shit, even though he says he retired?
No, he doesn't do it. He defends his family, which is how all ex-assassins do it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Actually, part of the big gag at the beginning is that the other main characters is constantly begging him to become an assassin again. And he's like, I have a wife and kid now. Actually, he doesn't say that because he also, one of the gags is he doesn't say anything.
Oh, he doesn't talk.
Yeah. He doesn't talk. He's a little Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, now the mustache makes sense.
Exactly. Moving on to another juggernaut, a big shonen pillar, Hunter Hunter. Now this is, of course, a plucky dum dum.
It's also legacy.
Yeah, we could put legacy. This is not reboot, though, because it is just straight shot, has just been continuing forever.
This is the most pure of the original shonen vein that all of these kind of, you know, spring off of, right?
Yeah.
This is going all the way back to being a contemporary of Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, no. Hunter x Hunter and One Piece are the absolute titanic presences among the shonen lineup. Now, Titanic maybe is foreboding because Hunter x Hunter has also had a very checkered past last let's say half decade, maybe decade or so, Togashi's been having a bad time. Let's just say that.
Well, I know that it's one of those series that goes in and out of years-long hiatuses.
We just got a few more chapters, which is fun, but who knows when he'll come back again. I think he just got back surgery. Okay, now we move on to our first new face. This one's called Urban Legend Files, and help me break this one down, because maybe we need some new categories on our list. This is a kind of lighthearted comedy where a girl who is obsessed with the occult joins her college's occult club because there is a boy who constantly attracts occult happenings against his will. And so the gag here is that she is constantly forcing him into uncomfortable occult scenarios. In this case, by bribing him with Amazon gift cards.
Well, you know, that makes sense. Everybody wants to get paid. The first thing that jumps out to me is that the inciting premise you're describing is very reminiscent of what we've already seen and talked about in Dandadan, a high school paranormal comedy.
Well, they're in college and there's no battling. This is purely sort of like lighthearted comedy that revolves around a guy who is against his will, an occult magnet. And the girl who becomes obsessed with him because of his ability to summon occult things. Like the first chapter is about the Kuchisake Ona, the split-mouthed woman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The second chapter is about the Charlie game, which is a new one to me. It's apparently just doing a Ouija board, except you ask Charlie questions, and supposedly Charlie is a Mexican ghost.
What?
Don't know.
What?
Yeah, that one caught me by surprise. I've never heard of that before. And then the third one is about this man, the man who appears in dreams.
Oh, that guy that appears in all those dreams that I have.
Yeah, as in, have you seen this man? That the third chapter is about that. And he appears in it. It's very weird.
How many chapters are out right now?
Three.
Oh, okay, so it's brand spanking new.
Yeah. And I really like it. I think it's cute, and I think it's very funny. The characters are, for the most part, pretty endearing. It's actually funny. So that's a good thing, I guess. So I guess we could call this a cult.
Yeah,
it's definitely a cult. We can put that on there.
Now, I know you said there's no battling that happens, but I don't think that necessarily excludes it from being a powers rom comedy. His power, obviously, is to attract weird occult shit.
I guess so. You could call that powers. You know, in that case, we need to add category for occult and alien, and then make check marks for Dandadan in both of those as well.
Occult alien. Got it.
We're going to skip over Sid Craft, Love is a Mystery, because I absolutely hate depictions of Sherlock Holmes in manga.
Huh?
Absolutely fucking terrible. This one's hard to categorize. Bug Ego. This was a one-shot by, well, one, and Kyoto Shitara did the illustration, that they very weirdly started serializing for some reason.
I have to believe that they're trying to capitalize on, I don't know, how strong is One Punch Man still going? Because I feel like...
Pretty strong.
One has a lot of side projects that don't seem to go to their full logical conclusion. Like, what happened with that one about all the different worlds meeting? Is that still going?
Yeah, that's still going.
Okay.
There's like a story going in there.
Well, I don't know. All right, Bug Ego, what's going on here?
Bug Ego. I don't know about the serialization, but the one shot is very charming. It's basically about two high school friends. One of them is constantly teaching the other one about weird life hacks. And the other one, like, doesn't believe him but still tries them, and they basically don't work ever but he does them anyway until like one of them does work, and it's very dramatic and cool and funny. So that's hard to fit in here. I'm not sure where it sits on the meta.
Well, it sounds a bit slice of lifey, you know.
Yeah, there's a bit of an occultish like tinge to it, but it's not really like, you know, slit mouth woman man-faced dog kind of a cult.
Yeah.
It's just like, what if weird things happened?
I don't know. Like, what if weird things happen, but also it was the movie Clerks?
Yeah, kind of.
I'm just going to put Clerks down.
Okay, put Clerks down.
Yeah.
Buddy comedy. All right, moving on. We have one called Ryota Killed His Brother. You're going to have to help me out with this one a little bit. This is a sort of family drama horror about a boy whose mom died, forcing him to raise his little brother, who, despite being very cute and loving, is constantly tormenting him to the point where he wants to kill his little brother.
Tormenting him how?
Well, constantly crying when he's not, like, giving him hugs, throwing toys at his head, keeping him from, like, hanging out with his friends because he has to go straight home and take care of the kid.
Oh, so you mean being a baby?
Yeah, by being a baby. And the big one, the kid bites him really hard all the time to the point where it draws blood.
Okay, and that's, like, a thematic recurrence that keeps happening?
Yes, the horror part seems to be that maybe that's a little bit more than just a kid who's teething. The implication is that something strange is happening with this kid who is biting his brother so hard it's drawing blood.
So
there's also a little thing about maybe the kid is not a baby, possibly.
I'm gonna put this down for a cult then. Maybe alien. Some kind of alien vampire, possibly. I'm getting maybe baby alien vampire going on here.
Baby alien vampire, maybe.
Yeah.
So what categories do we have so far? What does that fit in with? Because we got a sort of like human drama horror.
Yeah.
I guess we can mark that down for an occult.
I put down family horror, brackets occult, maybe alien, maybe vampire. So I'm gonna combine that into a maybe Beast Boy category.
Possibly. Who knows?
Possible Beast Boy. That's a tough one. I don't think that really fits in thematically with anything else we've talked about, unless one of them, you know, starts swinging around a sword. Then we could put Sword Boy.
It's interesting. It's one of the ones that actually really caught my attention. Okay, moving on. We have one that I've already talked about. Centuria. This is actually by one of Tatsuki Fujimoto's, I guess he wouldn't call it a protege, assistant.
Man, assistant sounds so much more disrespectful than protege.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think he's very proud to have talented assistants.
This one was made by my secretary. I fired them for it.
Centuria, this one is, you can make a new mark, medieval fantasy, and also powers battles. And I guess you could also put a check mark for baby. There's a pretty important baby in it.
Medieval, powers battle, baby battling.
Yes.
I assume they fight a baby at some point. Otherwise, they wouldn't put the baby in there.
Well, he protects a baby. Our powers boy protects a baby.
Okay. All right. I guess that's okay. It'd be cooler if he fought the baby.
Yeah. Next one is, and this is, I think I read this maybe one chapter a long time ago, but I don't really remember very much. Ruri Dragon by Masaoki Shindo. This is a halvesies. It's a girl who's a dragon. So we've got halvesies plus monster girl.
Beast boy, but she's a girl.
Yep. And lightweight romantic comedy. Rom-comedy. Yes. Pretty standard fare. It's a cute girl who's also a dragon. That's, you know, who knows? Maybe it's great.
Yeah, you know, seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah. I mean, there's a million of these. There's dime a dozen. But, you know, maybe it's great. I shouldn't shit talk. Don't really know anything. Okay, the next one is called Hero Organization. This is a story about a boy who desperately wants to become a mech pilot, but not for the reason you think. So we've got mech. Is this our first mech?
I think this is our first mecha. I'm also, by the way you said that, I'm going to put down genre subversion.
Oh, big time genre subversion. And Daddy Revenger.
Oh, he's a Daddy Revenger too.
Yeah, because the reason he wants to pilot mechs is because the mech organization called the Hero Organization killed his fucking dad, dude, in space. Whoa.
Cold-blooded.
Cold-blooded. And then they lied and covered it up, and now he wants to discover the truth so he can revenge his dad using a big mech.
Oh, so they're doing a Mobile Suit Gundam, right? That's what Amuro Ray did. He wanted to revenge his dad.
Yeah, it's a little more complicated than that. That's not on the list. Let's not get bogged down. So this is a dad revenger mecha.
Okay.
Okay, the next one is interesting. This is called Mad by Yusuke Otori. This is Alien.
I'm just going to put down James Cameron.
Not Aliens. Not even Alien 3. This is actually the version of Alien that was continued into the comic.
Oh, they're Ridley Scott.
Aliens made it to Earth in this version and killed basically everyone. And it's about a survivor. Now, the big twist here is that there's a halvesies.
The survivor is a half alien?
No, someone else is.
Oh.
I guess that's a twist.
Okay.
He's not it. At least, you know, I've only read 6 chapters of it. Maybe he becomes one later. But he is not it at the beginning.
Oh, you know he's definitely getting alien powers at some point.
Maybe. The interesting thing about Mad is the aliens are... they are just xenomorphs.
They're just the aliens.
It's wild. It feels like maybe some copyright infringement is going down.
Japan doesn't have extradition treaties with the U.S., right?
That one's fun. I like that one. But we've got halvesies and alien.
Okay.
All right. The next one is Undead Unluck, which this is the one about the fat titty girl who has the power of being unlucky, and her beefcake zombie boyfriend who desperately wants to die. So I guess we have Immortal.
I'm gonna put Beast Boy because he's half zombie. He's an immortal half zombie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about it.
That's it. I don't really care about Undead Unluck. All right. The next one is Goku Rakugai, one that I am absolutely in love with and love very much. Goku Rakugai by Yuto Sano. Goku Rakugai is about a halvesies. He's half MAGA, which is still hilarious to me.
He's what?
He's half MAGA.
He's half conservative?
The monsters, the demons are called MAGA.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you think that was intentional?
No, not intentional at all.
That's what I figured, and that makes it so much more funny.
Yeah, it's very weird. He's part of a duo that do like sort of underground investigative work that battle demons. So I guess we could call that a fringe Navy SEAL.
A weekend warrior.
Sure, a weekend warrior. All right, next one is Make the Exorcist Fall in Love. This is a battle shonen parody rom-com. It's about an exorcist who unknowingly is falling in love with a demon who's trying to trick him into having sex with her.
Uh-huh. And she has to try real hard to do this?
Yeah, because he's Catholic and he's taken a vow to the church to be celibate.
Okay, this is our first Catholic category on here.
Yeah, put Catholic on there, put virgin on there.
And I'm gonna put monster girlfriend.
You could put it as a cult. Yeah, I guess you could put her as monster girlfriend as well.
Yeah.
I'm skipping the ones that are purely just slice of life rom-coms because it's just too much. We know what the deal is there. But the next one is Hope You're Happy Lemon. Interesting, right?
Hey. I tell you, it's picking up. It's picking up, baby.
Yep. So we got to throw down a gender bender in there.
Let's see. You're going to go gender bender, rom-com. I feel like a body swap could be a specific different thing than simply a gender bender, but I'm going to put them
counting.
Both.
I think I'm counting it. You could put them both. Sure.
Yeah. I'm putting them both. Man, I like that one. I really like where they're going with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The next one is Mission Yozakura Family. This is a story about a boy who is forced to be an assassin because the girl he likes is part of an assassin family.
Don't you hate it when that happens?
Yeah, I guess, you know, he has to protect her from her brother, I suppose. There's a bit of a weird vibe there.
That's actually a recurring thing that I notice in a lot of these. I'm assuming that from what you just said, that this has a pretty heavy rom-com element to it. And I see that in a lot of the... I'm going to put supernatural rom-com.
Well, it's not supernatural. He's just an assassin.
Assassins aren't real, so I'm putting that as supernatural.
Okay, but you need to mark it as assassin, because that is a major theme. We have a lot of assassins, so you're gonna have to put assassin down.
Okay, well,
I'm sorry.
Do I need to go back? Do I need to put assassin into Boruto as well? Because ninjas are assassins.
No, we could count it as an assassin, but I think ninjas are distinct in manga. If you want to put assassin on there,
I'm gonna put it. Sure, I think that we need to strive for consistency at least.
Okay, yeah. Put it down then. And this is also assassin. I guess you could call it an assassin genre subversion. All right, next one. It's called Shinobi Undercover. Now, this is a very typical plot. We get a lot of these. This is about a ninja, a government ninja. He's a Navy SEAL who goes undercover as a high school student to protect an oblivious high school girl. And he's very shy, which makes it very difficult. But he is the most powerful ninja. So we've got a Navy SEAL, assassin, and a one-puncher.
Yes.
And, a fish out of water.
Why not? Now
this one's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's very straightforward. It's exactly what you picture.
How do you get to be the most powerful one-puncher assassin and still have social anxiety?
It happens, according to manga, it happens all the time.
I would think that being the world's best assassin would come with, you would require the ability to completely ignore social convention at its most basic function.
The implication of chapter one of that is that because he is a ninja, he never interacts with other human beings, except to kill them.
You know what? I was going to say that's stupid, but they did that in Hell's Paradise, and I really like that character.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially it. He's much more likable in Hell's Paradise, though. This kid is fucking annoying. Okay, next one is, of course, Blue Exorcist. We've got Catholic, dum-dum, plucky dum-dum, halvesies.
Wow, that's a lot of the big hitters.
Oh, it's up there, baby. There's a reason it's still going strong. After that, we've got Marriage Toxin, Assassin.
More assassins.
Assassin, One Puncher, genre subversion. Also, gender bender.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of heavy lifting with that plot.
Oh, yeah. I guess we could have gone, but, you know, if we did this over again, I would also start using bloodline. But, you know, manga is about the bloodlines. We've got bloodlines for days everywhere you look.
Also, it's pronounced marriage X toxin or possibly marriage by toxin.
No, there's no X. It's just marriage toxin, one word.
No, I put in the X. I'm putting in the X right now. I'm making the decision.
You fool. I hope you're tallying these correctly.
Also, I'm going to put an X in Blue Exorcist, too, just for the hell of it. Blue X Exorcist.
Blue XX Exorcist.
Blue Zexorcist.
Blue Zexorcist.
Yeah, I think is how it's going to be pronounced.
All right. We have another one that you're going to have to help me a little bit with. This one's called Yatara, which is one of the other ones I actually really liked. This one's only got 5 chapters out. This is the story about a sort of, mark it as a cult, because this is a story about like a kind of a horrifying ghost creature that manifests in our world for the sole purpose of eating humans.
Very relatable.
Except for the first humans he discovers are a trio of very small children who are starving to death in their apartment. And when he eats them, they taste very bad. So he throws them up and decides to raise them until they taste good.
That actually sounds really interesting.
Yeah,
I'm very intrigued by that.
I like it a lot. I think it's cool.
I'm going to call that family dramedy.
Okay, it's definitely a cult. That's a hard one there.
Yeah, I got that.
All right, the next one is called Ultimate Exorcist Kiyoshi. Right off the bat, we have Catholic, we have One Puncher, we have genre subversion, because Ultimate Exorcist Kiyoshi is about an incredibly powerful kid who is the next up and comer, most powerful exorcist, except even though he looks super like edgy and like badass, he is actually a coward with incredible social anxiety. And he thinks all of his weird tattoos and piercings are super cringe. So he's super self-conscious about them.
Then why did he get them?
I guess it's part of like getting Catholic exorcist powers.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Yep. So we've got One Puncher. We've got occult. We've got Catholic, genre subversion. All the like super moves in this comic are named after various movies. So when he does his power move the first time, he says Moonrise Kingdom out loud. Later on, he says Perfect Blue.
Okay, so they're playing it straight. They're not being tongue in cheek with it.
They're just doing it. Like, no attempt to hide it. It is just straight up.
Because it's like, it's funny and charming when Dan Dedan makes all those ABBA references with their monster fighting. This is sad and cringy.
They make all kinds of references. Yeah. I mean, it's very pointed, and this is just a like Powers Boy battle comedy. The next one is Smother Me. This is very funny because it's supposedly set in Detroit, but it is like the RoboCop version of Detroit because it is just like super crime. It is about a child orphan who is taken in by an assassin organization to become the best child assassin.
So we got assassin and one puncher.
He is not a one puncher. He gets his ass kicked a bunch of times.
Oh, okay.
So not a one puncher, but he is an assassin.
Is he a plucky dum-dum?
No, he's pretty pathetic and broody and weirdly naive.
So does he at least have a sword?
No, he uses piano wire.
Well, there's nothing redeemable about this kid.
It's a weird one. That's a weird one.
So I've just got Assassin and Detroit.
Yeah, it's very funny that it takes place in a fake America, which is so crime-riddled that they are just selling children in the children selling market. It's wild. That's a real wild one. Okay, we've got Kindergarten Wars, which is genre subversion, and Assassin. That's very straightforward. That is just ex-assassins protecting a kindergarten. It's exactly what it says on the tin.
I mean, are these particularly important kindergartners?
Yeah, they're like VIP kindergartners.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. All right, what's next?
The next one is Nightlight Hounds. This is about another fake America. This time it's like sort of old-timey New York, where a kid... who can't really cut it in the mafia discovers that actually the mafia is full of vampires.
Huh?
And he teams up with a little girl who turns out to be a werewolf to defeat them.
Okay, I'm gonna put Beast Boy in there just for the werewolf.
Sure, she's a girl who turns into a werewolf.
Yeah, and fake America.
And we've got a cult.
And a cult, yeah. I'm trying to think. There was something else that was much more silly that posited that all of organized crime is actually like they're all like mummies or something, or undead.
Well, there's Katakio Hitman Reborn, which posits that the mafia is just made up of various incredibly powerful supernatural teenagers.
I hate anything where a head of a multinational crime organization is a teenager of any kind.
Oh, that'll come up a lot. The next one is No Name. No Name, we talked about it pretty recently.
Mm-hmm.
No Name, which I really like. Despite its tonal shift, the one shot is essentially Powers Chinatown, almost down to the smallest detail. Just what if Chinatown happened in a manga power world? And then the rest of the series kind of turns into Powers LA Confidential, which is also a strange change.
So some kind of superpowered noir thing going on.
Yes, it's a buddy cop noir mystery, except in a powers world. And the two main characters really match up with LA Confidential because the girl who turns into a bear is a Russell Crowe.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy with dogs is a... Who was that one? It wasn't Ethan Hawke. It was
Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce. He's very much a Guy Pearce guy. It matches up almost weirdly, strangely close. that one is, I guess we don't have one for cop, do we? I guess they could be Navy SEALs.
Yeah, they're Navy SEALs.
Not much of a genre subversion. They play the noir detective thing very straight.
I put power battle in there. Seemed pretty obvious.
Yeah, I guess you could put a halvesies because it's a girl who turns into a bear. But does that work when it's just a power she has? I don't know.
How much more we got on this list?
I'll speed through the rest of these. And you can just tell me if it fits into something we already have.
Okay, all right.
Okay, we have Mago Koto Scramble, What Lies in Your Heart. It's a rom-com about a guy who can read minds.
Powers battle, sure. Maybe a cult. Occultish.
Yeah, I guess you could say a cult. The next one is No Gyaru in This Class. It's about a straight A student who's desperate to become a Gyaru.
Writing that one down.
Yeah, you put a Gyaru on there.
Well, I mean, Gyaru is obviously a genre unto itself. It seems like it's probably got some kind of rom-com element that's sneaking around in there. Unless there's no rom, it's all com. I could be into that.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't actually read that one. The next one is called Wild Strawberry. It's about, it's sort of like Green's World, where it's about a world that is taken over by malicious plants. And a boy's sister turns into a big plant and gets inside of him. So he is half man, half plant. So he's a halfsies in a sort of a post-apocalypse Japan.
Okay. Makes sense.
The next one is Oversleeping Takahashi. This is just One Punch if One Punch was a cult. Instead of superheroes.
So he's what, the most powerful ghost battler or something?
Yeah, he's the most powerful ghost battler whose gag is he's constantly telling his teacher that he overslept and that's why he's late to class, when actually it's because he punches ghosts. The girl that likes him like follows him one day and discovers that he punches ghosts, and then she kind of tries to date him.
Oh, that's an occult powers battle,
I guess, but he doesn't battle any other exorcist. He just punches ghosts.
Yeah, battling ghosts have powers. If it's his ghost punching powers versus their ghost regular power, that's still a powers battle.
Okay, fine. Next one is Elusive Samurai, historical.
Yeah, historical action. Powers battle. And let's be honest, his power is that he's really lucky, right? It is a supernatural luck.
Well, he's elusive.
His elusiveness.
He jumps around. He's incredibly agile. The next one is Magi Lumiere Co. That is magical girl genre subversion.
Mm-hmm.
Next one is Tis Time for Torture Princess. That is a gag comic about a princess who's being tortured by demons, except the torture is stuff like tickling her.
Oh, so it's a fetish thing.
It is definitely a fetish thing.
That's a new category. All right, fetish.
weird fetish.
Yeah, weird fetish is a new category.
Okay, the next one is New Age Exorcist, which is about a boy who discovers that there's a ghost living in one of the classrooms at his school, and she, like, gives him ghost powers so he can battle ghosts. Also, she's, like, a big titty anime lady, so he, like, falls in love with her, I guess.
Well, powers battle, occult. Pretty much that covers it.
Yeah. The next one is, obviously, Seraph of the End. A guy fights vampires in a post-apocalypse.
So, Fist of the North Star, but with more vampires.
Yeah, I guess so. Also, you could put that as a Navy SEAL, because he does join an organization, a vampire battling organization.
How big is your vampire problem if you need an entire organization of people to go out and punch them?
There's always a vampire eliminating organization. Come on.
Well, there wouldn't need to be if there were no vampires. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that's the goal, right? The next one is Witch Watch. Everybody knows Witch Watch. It's about the witch who is in love with her childhood friend who has to protect her from all the weird mishaps she gets into.
She's an inept witch.
Yeah. Also, he's like half ogre or something. So he's a halfsies. There's occult stuff. It's by the guy who did Astralust in Space, which I like, and Sket Dance, which I don't like quite as much. The next one is Runaway Darling. Runaway Darling is about a guy who works in kind of like the low-key mafia space, but his niche is that he rescues people from bad situations. He's kind of a flirt. He's sort of a Lupin style if Lupin wasn't as lecherous.
A lovable thief, if you will.
Yes, exactly. So we've got like mafia, and well, that's kind of it. He's not an assassin. He's just an escape artist. The next one is Tokyo Underworld. This is a death game I've talked about before. It's about a bunch of kids who get cursed to go to the Tokyo Underworld and have to death game their way back to the surface.
Is this our first death game to appear on this list?
It is, yeah.
Wow, didn't expect to see it so far down.
I know, it's weird, right?
Yeah.
There's the next one is Girl Meets Rock. It's about what if a girl played the guitar.
I'm gonna happens
all the time.
I mean, we can call that a Bocchi-like at this point, right?
Sure.
Or if you want to go even farther back, a K-On! Or a Lucky Star. Girls in a Band is in fact its own genre.
Yes, it really is. Okay, the last one is called Ankoku Delta by Alpa, who did a really fun one-shot I read a long time ago called Death Salmon Hunter. You should go read that. You're going to have to help me out with this one because this one's a little weird. This is about a girl who is like an extra-dimensional being who lives in a society that is like above human society, like above the human dimension. And she and her, all of her, the people in her world interact with humanity by like extra dimensionally sucking their life force out using giant straws. And her favorite pastime is to rent a skin suit and travel through an interdimensional door and pretend to be a human.
Okay. And I mean, are these extra dimensional beings portrayed as evil in their soul sucking endeavors?
No, it's not an evil thing. It's just kind of like what people do. It's just like it's kind of like a job. It's just a job.
Okay. I mean, we've got Alien. I'm going to throw Alien in there. Seems pretty obvious.
God. Yeah.
Beyond that, I don't know. When she is in her human skin suit, does she like, is there like a plucky dum-dum that is trying to court her? Is it a rom-com thing? Are there other aliens that are trying to eat the humans?
There is a plot that kind of unfolds, but it doesn't seem super important. It's mostly like really, she's really fascinated by human society. So she likes just having weird experiences in the human world. She accidentally saves the life of a boy who keeps getting in trouble, and she accidentally saves his life again. And he's like sort of in love with her, even though he doesn't know she's like an extra-dimensional being and she's wearing a skin suit. It's weird. It's a weird one.
I cannot place my finger on that outside of just Alien. So yeah, it's Ridley Scott's
it's Alien.
Alien.
Yeah. Okay, and that's it. That's the shonen meta right now. So
I'm going to take a brief overlook of everything we just said, and just kind of going through this list here, the number one thing or things that recurringly pop out at me are Assassin, big time.
Big time.
Yeah, big time. We've got Powers Battle, but that's to be expected for the most part. That's not shocking.
Not surprising. Not surprising.
Genre subversion pops up over and over again. And now that is an interesting one for me because obviously, you know, manga and shonen manga has been a staple in the media sphere in Japan and outside of Japan for several decades now. And so there's a lot of genre to subvert is what I'm trying to say.
I think if we look at the manga meta right now, we realize that people are pretty tired of stuff just playing it straight. Mm-hmm. If you want the straight dope, you just read One Piece, right?
You just read One Piece or you go back and watch Dragon Ball Super, because that's what that's there for.
Yeah, the classics are so readily available. Like, what people want are ironic twists. And I think, like I talked about Chainsaw Man before, kind of initiating this new NU, like new metal, new shonen,
mm-hmm.
Is people want stuff that takes what you expect from the old stuff and gives it the ironic twist.
And that,
they don't necessarily want new things because new things are scary. What they want are the old things presented in new ways.
Yes. Whereas Goku was the most powerful puncher and everybody knew it, including him. Now you have One Punch Man and its various offshoots, where the gag, if you will, is that he is the most powerful puncher, but nobody knows it, or very few people know it. Or you can do the inverse of that, where everybody knows they're the most powerful except for that central person, right?
Well, yes, those two, but also the one where it's just the kind of person you don't expect to be the most powerful.
Yes, that is
like,
the third
way.
Like
a wimp.
Yeah.
A wimp or a scaredy cat or like a slacker, which
you,
is,
you know, which
sort
is what we
what...
see in like Sakamoto Days or something like that.
Yes. Exactly.
The unassuming powerful one.
Again, the subversion of the most powerful. That's also the big gag of the Ultimate Exorcist, is he's projects the idea of like the absolute edgy cringelord anime hero protagonist, but he is actually a cowardly loser.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Exactly that kind of thing. Whose biggest concern is that since he was forced to get tattoos, he can't take public baths, which I find relatable.
Yeah, yeah, they don't let me out in public anymore, but it's for reasons unrelated to my body.
So what else do we got? Let's run down the list real quick. What are the top ones besides those?
Top ones besides those, it seems to be a kind of even split between assassin and Navy SEAL, which I think really boils down to which side of the authoritarian spread you fall on. You know, assassins, yeah, obviously a bit more independent, free thinking. They kind of want to do their own thing.
Yeah, they've got a crime element, a crime grime.
Yeah, crime
grime.
That
is fun. Yeah, they're edgy. They're Tarantino.
Whereas Navy SEAL, we kind of have the you know, plucky dum-dum, the one puncher. All of these guys can be both genre subverting in their... let's say lackadaisical attitude while still working within the confines of the system. That's kind of what they're there for. You know, your Denjis and whatnot.
It's fun to have a job that's cool and be on a team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as you're just following orders, everything is fine, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, the you got to hide the fact that you're, you know, a weirdo, a super powerful weirdo. But as long as you can do that, you can make friends and go on fun adventures and get paid for it.
Now, here's the thing. This is actually, this next category is the number one most recurring tag we've put on all of these. Do you want to guess what that is?
Oh, shit. Havsies.
Close. Close.
Oh, fuck.
I would say very closely tied, but occult. It's all over the place here.
Oh, shit. I didn't even think about that, but you're right.
Yeah.
Everybody loves the occult shit.
You know, I think that after so many years of anime, shonen being tied to either, I would say, straight up sci-fi elements, you know, with your mecha battles and alien hunting and whatnot back in the day, we're seeing rebound into the more traditional and esoteric as a thematic backing for a lot of these, right?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Like I said about the apocalypses, it's sort of like, and the fantasies, right? Like we've talked about, it's a regression towards something that is nonsensical instead of your science fiction, which looks forward into a future nobody really wants to ponder. That's one of the things I was going to say is surprising about not being a lot of like mech stuff. But I think that is exactly tied into the people don't want to think about the future. That is not a good thing to think about.
I don't want to think about a future with giant, cool robots because I'm never going to pilot them. We have to fundamentally understand that now. All of the cool sci-fi shit that you think could possibly happen within your lifetime, it's not going to happen. And if it does happen, you're not going to be able to use it.
We understand that we already do live in the future, and the future fucking sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks. It's not good. We don't like being here. In fact, it would be cool if anything else besides the future was happening. Like ghosts.
Yeah.
Or fantasy.
You know, something that is easily hand-waved away with a little chanting and some candles and incense, right?
Yeah. That's the dope shit. And so let's take a look at the very bottom of the list, just to round it out.
Well, I was surprised that we only had, and admittedly, we skipped over a few titles here, but we only had
Nothing important.
We had one straight up rom-com focused rom-com with Hope You're Happy Lemon. Other than the fact that it's a body swap thing, there's nothing really, so genre subverting or out of this world about that story.
And I did skip a lot of those because they really don't have any subversions or twists. You know, obviously Blue Box is super popular right now, but it is just like guy meets girl. And there are so many of those that just do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In the same vein, we only had one mecha-focused story on here.
Yes.
Very, very big lack of giant robots in this list. Notable lack.
Very surprising to me, like I said.
I thought giant robots were never going to go out of style, but here we are.
Here we are.
What else was a low-hanging fruit?
Low-hanging fruit? Is that how that works?
Wait, no, I think a low-ranking fruit.
Low-ranking fruit. What else is a low-ranking fruit, Nate?
Everything else kind of falls into the assassin, genre subversion, occult categories we laid out. We only had one fish-out-of-water story, but that, again, was tied to a greater assassin storyline with the Shinobi.
Yes, and very much tied to just the, dork, very powerful dork, needs a foible.
Yeah, yes.
Kind of thing.
And so I think the one thing I expected, and it was not the lowest, but I did expect more Catholic on here. Catholic seemed to be pretty big for a while, and now we're moving away. We're going back into the more traditional Japanese yokai theming, Shintoism and Taoism, right?
We've got demons mixed in here and there, but a lot of times they'll skip over the Catholic part. I will say, D. Grayman, like I mentioned before, is still running, but I didn't see it on this list, so I left it off. Big Catholic vibes there.
Yeah, I think that about sums it up for the least common ones, but it is very clear now that occult assassin genre subversion, that's the meta.
The occult assassins who subvert their genre.
Yeah. Which, I mean, if you want to put it in those categories specifically, Chainsaw Man, that's got a cult in there too. It's kind of the poster boy for that three combination of words.
And that's Goku Raku guy as well.
And again, I think we can equate assassin and Navy SEAL for the purposes of this ranking.
sure.
So yeah. Yeah, I think we cracked the code.
If you're out there writing some new Shueisha pitches, you got to write occult assassin with a genre twist. That's the only way to make it in this industry.
Either that or lesbian Gundams.
Lesbian Gundams, or just reboot something else. Those are your only choices.
Yeah, reboot a series that was much more popular than anything you could ever create.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to take you far. Until the fans of that thing start hating you.
Okay, that was an exhaustive list. I think that we've said about what we can about the current meta of the Shonen Jump release. That's manga, baby. I feel pretty good about that list, actually. That's a pretty comprehensive look at what's going on here. So please take this knowledge, go create the next amazing hit manga about an occult assassin who subverts the genre.
Yeah, and when you get your anime adaptation, make sure to shout us out.
I mean, we'll know. If you don't shout us out, we will know, and we will call you out for it.
Yes, we'll use the entire power of this podcast to crush you.
Okay, I think that's about it. People, beautiful, handsome, tall listeners, go out, do the things that good listeners do, and give us likes. Leave us comments. I really love it when you leave me comments on the TikTok, on the Spotify episode releases.
Yeah, sure.
Anywhere, really, that you can write down words. They can even be mean. I don't care. I just want to interact.
Yeah. That is absolutely true. I don't care if you flame us. We started up the Instagram. Check that shit out. Could use some followers there. I mean, that's it, right?
Yeah, that's about it. Bye. Bye.
Kidding me? Look at this fucking picture. It's two space lesbians looking at each other as they stand next to a space lesbian Gundam.